Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone. It's the 5th of September, and as we start our day together like this on Faith Radio Mornings, just offer the reminder that first and foremost, we are sons and daughters of a king in a kingdom that knows no end. We are sons and daughters of Jesus, through whom all things have been made, including us. And so as we're dealing with all of the rancor and the news and some of the divisions of the day, remember that we all bear the image of God. And if anything else keeps us united, that is the central fact, that God is for all of us. And even in the difficulties of the day, he desires that none would perish, but all would come to be part of his kingdom. And so welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by the familiar names of Logan Rausch and Paul Perreault, who, along with Rachel Sutton, bring the guests into the show and bring the news of the day. And, of course, Bill English is our regular Wednesday morning guest at this time, and he's in studio, and he's actually clapping for Logan Rausch right now, which it creates a bit of dissonance in me, Bill. I mean, you know, if there's anything we can all agree on, it is, you know, just the role of Logan, you know, and just we were talking during the break that, you know, there's a witness that you and I can bear in studio to Mr. Rausch. Is there not? I mean,
well, yes, but he needs encouragement.
Well, he does.
He does. He's coming along quite well.
He is. You know, for 22 years old, he really brings, you know, perspective and depth that I'd hate to say.
Well,
but
I'd say perspective.
So, you know, any recommend, you know, you're in business, you work with young people and across the board. I mean, as people are trying to figure out life moving forward, I think often of my graduates who are heading out of Northwestern and maybe Bethel, some of the places where I teach, and just think the world suddenly looks really wide and very difficult to navigate. What do you suggest for those first couple of years out of school?
Stay out of debt.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself and grow closer to God. And make sure that you understand where God is really taking you on your trajectory. And if there's anything big you want to do that you can't do once you're really settled down, go do it now.
Wow. And it is, that's it's so tough coming in. I know that the stats are these days that the cost of living has more than doubled in the last 20, 30 years, and yet the income levels have not
kept up
with that.
Yeah.
And so I know a lot of young people feel like a failure these days if they're still living with their parents. And I think parents feel like a failure as well if they're 25, 26-year-old. But that's really a weird phenomenon in world history. Most of the time, families have stayed together for the course of a lifetime.
Yeah, they do. And I've been saying for some time now that that families are going to have to coalesce and live under the same roof. I just think the economic conditions are going to point in that direction.
Yeah, and it really is an invitation then maybe to coming back together as integrated families as opposed to the fragmentation we so often experience.
Yeah, we are so individualistic in this society. We don't belong to groups. We belong to tribes. We belong to factions. But really coming together as part of seeing yourself and your persona is part of something much larger than yourself is not something we do in America very well.
Well, it's Bill English. You know him from BibleandBusiness.com. He joins me on Wednesday mornings here on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about all matters of business from a Christian perspective. And I know, Bill, one of the things that can really drive families apart is being in business together. And you're so helpful and just kind of talking through the dimensions of that. So when we come back, lots to get to, especially about the idea of what it means for second and third generation people that take over the business to really follow the governance and the standards that have been set before them, because, boy, you go off the rails, the business goes off the rails. So some good advice coming from Bill English next on Faith Radio Mornings. Little Huey Lewis in the news here, and the power of love signifying the rival, which you've already heard his voice this morning, Bill English, BibleandBusiness.com, and comes in on Wednesday mornings to talk about business things from a Christian view, but knows more than just business, Bill. I mean, you're in about 6 weeks or so now heading to Israel, leading a tour over
there. Yeah, about 6 weeks. Yeah.
Well, I found it fascinating in the news this morning that archaeologists have said they think they've found the real site of the first miracle Christians believe Jesus performed. That was turning water into wine at the village of Cana. And it's a fascinating place to go in Israel where you can actually walk around these archaeological dig sites and they begin to unearth some of the inscriptions, some of the fragments, some of the tunnels maybe people were walking in during the time of Jesus. It's almost this surreal to walk around in these places.
It is surreal. I've only been there once. Have you ever been?
Yeah, I studied there for about 3.5 weeks as an undergrad and then went back one other time as part of a baseball missionary camp. And it was just, I mean, each time going, even just touching down in the plane, yes. You just feel like, whoa, the space and the land is just somehow different.
Everywhere you go, every step you take in Israel, there's history there. And you may not know what the history is,
right.
But you know you're in probably the most historical place in all of Earth.
Yeah. And going to the place where the water was turned to wine, I mean, I know we were in France this last spring, and they had this picture, a portrait of the wedding of Cana, one of the most famous portraits that's
right.
there. And the symbolism and the significance of water and wine all throughout the biblical text, I mean, even as fundamental as communion, there's so much there, and you get to explore underneath the surface of the scriptures what's really going on in these stories. It's fascinating.
So much of the scripture, if you stop to think about it, the geography of the land has so much to do with how we interpret the scripture. Going over and actually touching, feeling, being on the geography is huge in terms of uncorking the Bible as you read it.
Well, and the vineyards there are all over the place, and Jesus
yeah,
is often
are.
Using parables coming yeah. right out of the vineyards, and it makes more sense when you see this, and it makes more sense even why this miracle would have happened at the wedding.
Well, and Cana, if I remember correctly, is in the Jezreel Valley, and as you know, the Jezreel Valley is very fertile, and it was the site of Mount Gilboa is on the southeastern part of that. That's where Saul and David were killed by the Philistines. There's a lot that goes on in that Jezreel Valley, and I've never been to Cana. And I don't think our tour is actually going to Cana this
yeah.
time around, but I'm very excited to be going back to Israel.
Do you have any slots available still on the tour?
I do.
Know you had a lot of people.
I do. We have about two or three left, but they would have to sign up like in the next few days.
They would. Where can they go if they are interested? Some of our listeners here.
They can just get a hold of me, bill@bibleandbusiness.com.
That's great. And you can also call and text the studio if you want to join the conversation or even yep. get more information about the trip. It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. We'd love to have you part of the conversation this morning. And I know, Bill, as we talk about business things each Wednesday on the program, you have obviously been with any number of different kinds of businesses, large mm-hmm. and small, and you've worked with a lot of family businesses over the years. And one of the things that you've seen that can really create a lot of havoc in the business is when it gets passed down to the next generation. And there's a variety of things that need to be navigated in that situation. One of them is just about corporate governance and how to sort of, you know, stay true to the principles and the realities of the business in the past. So talk us through some of that.
Yeah, second generation usually grows up working in the business. And so they see how mom and dad ran the business. And whoever is going to take over the business in the second generation from a leadership standpoint, that's their model. Mom and dad, how mom and dad ran the business. That's their model for how to run the business. Problem is that autocratic, I'm kind of wearing all the hats leader model from the first generation doesn't work when it goes to the second generation because you have all the siblings who also want to have some power and control. And so you have to help the second generation realize that they have to really actually implement governance. They have to have shareholder meetings, board of director meetings. They have to have family meetings about the business. They have to have all kinds of structure in order to survive the second generation that the first generation just didn't have to have.
Well, what do you sometimes see if there's maybe siblings in a family, 2, 3, 4 of them, that perhaps didn't get along so well growing up, maybe doing their own thing in life, but suddenly the potential for some wealth and some money gets involved in the business? I mean, I've got to believe that that gets tricky really quickly, where people who don't get along but are united by blood are coming together around some of the financial reality. I can't imagine what you see in this.
Well, yeah, you can, actually. What you can imagine is, fighting on steroids, right?
Yeah.
Because the business is able to throw off so much money, it's able to support one family when the kids are small, when the second generation or kids or teenagers. It supports one family, one lifestyle. Okay, but let's say that there's four children in the family and all four want to work in the business. The business isn't throwing off any more money when the children become the leaders, but now you have four families that it needs to support. And so there gets to be infighting, sibling rivalries, and all kinds of conflict that lead to people either cutting off or basically screwing each other in order to get the money so that they can maintain their lifestyle, so that they can realize their own personal hopes and dreams. It can really become just a huge killer of family relationships, as well as deteriorating the business, because businesses don't run well when the leadership is in conflict.
Yeah, and do you recommend that you bring some outside voices into these situations?
Absolutely.
As opposed to just throwing the family into the wolves and the pot together? I've got to believe some outside perspective that everybody agrees these are the rules by which we're playing could be helpful.
Absolutely, and yet most of the second generation people honestly believe that they don't need help, that they can work it out on their own, or they're just going to ignore everybody and go do their own thing. I have a situation right now with two sisters and a brother. They own a resort here in Minnesota, and the brother is actually the CEO of this resort, but he is starting to take resort property and resort assets to start his own business because he's so mad at his sisters. Well, you can't do that. I mean, you can't, as a CEO of a company, you have a fiduciary responsibility to do what's best for that company and its shareholders. All three of them are equal shareholders here. By Minnesota state law, you just can't do that. You can't take that stuff and go start your own business. And so the conflicts, the sister literally said to me, "I've lost my brother. I don't care if I ever see him again."
No, it's just heartbreaking.
You know, I had another situation where a son, 41 years old, looked at his mom in the first meeting I ever had with him, and he said, "My dad is a," and he gave an expletive.
Yeah.
And then he said, "I'm never expletive coming to my to his funeral."
It speaks to the power of when our eyes get focused on money and wealth.
Yeah.
Just that holding on tightly to stuff. Do you have some stories where it did work out well and some characteristics that we could learn from like, boy, this one actually did go well? Because I know most of them don't, but is there, we could just learn from this.
Yeah, we do. What we do at Platinum is we try to pull the family together and we try to help the family improve their family relationships as well as helping them improve the business. And when you actually talk to family members individually and you say, "Would you like to have a better relationship with your sister, your brother, your mother, your father?" 95% of them are going to say yes. Okay, well then, would you mind engaging in the hard work of us rebuilding the family as well as improving the business? And most of them will say yes, and then we go about a fairly structured way to do that.
It's Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. When we come back from break, Bill, I'd love to ask you just even about when different personalities in second and third generation take over a first generation business, what that means in terms of the tension that could be created if they want to chart out a different pathway, and there's some risk involved with that. So lots more coming with Bill English here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's just about 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings, joined in studio by Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. If you want to join the conversation, feel free to call in or text at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And Bill, we do have somebody who texted in a question about church as business kinds of conversations. And I can paraphrase the question. It says this, that church pastors and leaders are often resistant or not open to structure and strategic planning and some of the organizational practices that are helpful. How do we balance being led by the Spirit of God in the church, but also implementing strategic or sound business practices in order to carry out the mission of the church of growing God's kingdom? So pretty common question, well stated in terms of the church as a business, but not really. And how do we understand these, the intersection of the two?
Well, first of all, most pastors are entrepreneurs. Okay, so let's just take that as a given. Most of them are. Some are not, but most are. And so you entrepreneurs are usually resistant to structure. They like to be creative. They can see into the future. They can see what could be, and then they run towards it. And you either get on their bandwagon or get out of the way, but that's where they're going,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And so those who are resistant to structure, they can grow organizations only for so long without a lot of structure. And then at some point, they have to have it. Now, the Bible gives us structure. It's called an elder board. Okay, some churches have deacons and elders. Some just have elders. In the free church, we just have elders. Okay, the point is you have a board that oversees the people doing the work. And that's the same in churches as it is in parachurches, as it is in business, for-profit business, okay? That basic governance structure of having a board of directors that is holding accountable the leaders of the organization to accomplish the vision, mission, purpose, activities of the organization is essential to having that organization survive for the long term.
Hmm. Is there some trickiness, though, that can happen in the church where they have a board and the importance of it? But so often board members in churches are identified, or potential board members invited into the process, because they've already bought into the mission of the church. They've already bought into what the entrepreneurial pastor is doing. And so I've seen boards function on some level still subservient to the pastor because they were so ministered to by the pastor. So they're almost not in an oversight role. They're still kind of in an acquiescing one.
Yeah, acquiescing is a good term for that, because especially in your larger churches, the pastors are pretty powerful people, and usually they're the single point of liaison between the board and the staff, right?
Right.
I'm not sure that that's very healthy. And so the pastors themselves need to encourage the board to not just be a rubber stamp, a yes board, an acquiescing board, but a board that really holds the pastor and the other pastoral staffs accountable. When you go onto a board of a church, your role is a tricky one. Mm. It is not only to lead the church spiritually, to pray and anoint with oil and all those things that elders do, but it is also to be lovingly honest and hold the pastors accountable to certain things, and to do that in a loving way. But you still have to do it. People who get on church boards that are kind of mealy-mouthed and weak-kneed and weak-spined, they probably shouldn't be on the boards.
Mm. It's important, too, if you're going to be an effective church leader, even organization leader, to have at least a wee bit of humility that I get it. You can have a lot of passion and energy for what you see into the future, and you see the strategy and you see the possibility, but to have some humility in that, to recognize maybe you're going to have some pretty big blind spots. I've got to believe that is one of the things that might differentiate effectiveness from lack thereof, if you're not willing to look at your own blind spots.
And it's the ability to take one hat on and the other hat off. So on Sunday mornings, I'm the parishioner while the pastor's preaching, but on Monday night at the board meeting, I am a board member holding the pastor accountable, and also holding each other on the board accountable. And so you have to be willing to shift roles.
And Bill, we've been talking a little bit about giving things over to the next generation. And yeah, this also applies in church structures, right? In terms of, sometimes there's this movement of God that takes place in a church underneath a very effective visionary pastoral leader. But then second generation, third generation, it doesn't always continue in that way. And there gets to be the kind of same infighting that can happen in families. And I mean, talk us through what can happen in churches into the next generation.
Well, it's when you have a very strong pastor who's been in a church for a long time, when that pastor finally leaves, there's such a vacuum of leadership that is left in the wake, because that pastor is probably someone who is very involved in every aspect of the church. They made a lot of decisions, and they really felt that that's what God wanted them to do. But what they didn't do is develop the next generation of leaders within the church. One of the greatest legacies, if I can put it that way, or one of the greatest gifts that a seasoned pastor can give to his church is the development of new leaders. And that needs to start 5-10 years before he exits.
Yeah, I was just in conversations with somebody this last week where they're part of a church where there's a transition happening of a long-term senior pastor that is heading out. And the conversation is, do we try to bring somebody from the inside that's been in the church for a significant period of time, or do we need a fresh voice from the outside? I've got to believe that's a conversation both businesses and churches have to deal with. Do you recommend that I think about Apple, computers, for example. You know, Steve Jobs almost had Apple University, where he was leading the next generation from the inside out. Do you think it's better, or is it just by situation, to have somebody from the outside, or to raise up people from the inside?
I don't think it's better or worse either way. I think it's who's the next person up and who would make the right person. Look, two thoughts. Number one, if you're Citibank, GM, Microsoft, and you're looking for another CEO, there's probably only 5 to 10 people you can look at worldwide. Is the pool of people to be a CEO of that kind of corporation is just so small. And so they come in and they say, yeah, I want $40 million a year. And you're going to go, well, okay, all right, because there's just not a lot of people who can do that. Secondly, when it comes to pastoral transitions, my church went through one about 5 years ago, probably the best one I've ever seen. I actually interviewed the former pastor, the current pastor, and the elder who was the transitional elder among all that. There are three podcasts out at Bible and Business on that transition and how they did it. And I would encourage you that if your church is looking at a pastoral transition, go visit BibleandBusiness.com and listen to those three podcasts on the pastoral transitions.
Yeah, I think it could be just so helpful, because that is when churches tend to fragment and divide. And I mean, there's grief that's being dealt with as a pastor is leaving. There's an uncertainty. There's like, where do we go from here? How do we pick up the pieces? You almost get to the situation of what would the pastor do, you know, when you're thinking about the future. And to be thinking about something in a fresh way is really important when the pastor leaves.
Yeah, it is. And the incoming pastor needs to honor the past, but yet start leading the church forward. And instead of having a fear-based reaction to this, if you're a parishioner, I would say, hey, what are the opportunities?
Yeah.
What is this new guy going to bring us? And what are we going to bring to him that is really going to help propel the gospel and the kingdom forward? If we're looking at it as an organization, how's the organization going to get structured and stuff like that? I think that's the wrong view. The view should be, in my estimation anyways, what are we going to be doing new that's going to help bring the kingdom of God to our community?
And that's Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. And Bill, I love having you on the program. You know, Platinum Group, you lead as part of this organizational transition. I know you've gotten pretty busy lately. Lots of people have been tapping into your resources, and you have great ones to offer. Where can people get in touch with you if they want to maybe even get some advice or some consultant kind of work with you as part of the Platinum Group?
Yeah, as part of the Platinum Group, I'll still give out my Bible and Business address, because that's just easier for us to do. So just email me at bill@BibleandBusiness.com. And that's BibleandBusiness.com, or you can just call me at 763-458-3722.
I love that you give out your cell phone number over the air, Bill. It's fabulous stuff. Thanks for joining us as you do on Wednesday mornings. We'll take a break for Breakpoint and come back and wrap up our show with Bruce Ashford, and we'll talk a little bit about both transgenderism and continue the conversation on Judge Kavanaugh as part of the news headlines of the day. Love that conversation with Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. Just so engaging, and he just really knows his material and organizational structure and how to best move forward. Again, you can contact him. He loves hearing from the listeners directly, and he does often. Well, lots of news headlines today, obviously, but I'm always intrigued by a few of the maybe, let's say, lighter headlines of the day. And I don't know where we get our national days in our country, but today happens to be National Cheese Pizza Day. So hop on over to your favorite pizzeria and pick up a slice, but hold the toppings, because it's only cheese today. But pizza has been around for over 7,000 years. I would like to know how they know that and what piece of pizza they found from 7,000 years ago that could offer archaeological proof on that. Much more news to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we are joined by Dr. David Aikman, our foreign affairs correspondent, and he was talking about the impact of postmodernism and the lack of objective truth.
Right. I mean, postmodernism is essentially the view that nobody has a handle on truth, and in fact, that truth doesn't seem to exist. And that is quite disturbing, because that has led to the questioning of basic scientific discoveries. I mean, the fact that water boils at 100 degrees Celsius and 212 degrees Fahrenheit, even that sort of known scientific and physical fact is being questioned by large numbers of people. They think that, oh, that's Western science, that's white science, as though water boils at a lower temperature in China than in Washington, D.C. I mean, that's the disturbing part of it.
So love having Dr. Aikman as part of the show. Just the wealth of experience he brings from over 20 years covering global issues with Time Magazine, and just bringing that perspective that there are things that are true in this world, however humbly we have to pursue them. And so if you're going to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com and catch Dr. David Aikman there. Well, I know we're joined on the line already by Dr. Bruce Ashford, who is professor of theology and culture and dean of faculty at Southeastern Baptist Seminary, one of the great friends of the program. And I'm going to ask Bruce about some updated policy issues related to transgenderism and the use of pronouns next on Faith Radio Mornings.
There are times in a parent's life when secretly we want to run away. Sometimes it just seems easier than sticking around. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Whether you're in a good place right now or a bad place, it's the perfect time to engage with your kids. When your teen does something dopey, when the majority of your time is spent in conflict, You must stay engaged. So here's where you can start today. Build a solid foundation during the good times. Find something your child likes to do and participate together every week. And when conflict erupts, move toward your child. And on those days when you feel like escaping it all, don't cut and run. Hang in there, in good times and bad.
Want to hear Mark in person? For a list of upcoming events, go to parentingtodaysteens.org.
Well, I've referenced it a few times this morning that the news just seems to be coming fast and furious today and then kind of just pounding through these headlines. It does make me feel like I'm in a jungle. And who better to help us walk through the realities of the jungle than friend of the program, Dr. Bruce Ashford, who is works with a professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Seminary. He's dean of faculty there. And Bruce, I'm curious, are you getting back to school now in seminary, or, you know, at the seminary level, are you so spiritual that there's really no divide anymore between like school and pursuing the faith? And you're always dialed into the kingdom, from what I understand, Bruce.
That's exactly right. You read it exactly right. No, we are. We're back in for the semester. Got a lot of good vibes and good energy on campus. And, great to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I know that you just released an article on Judge Kavanaugh and some of their credentials, and it was picked up by Fox News as well. And can you just help us give some sanity to this conversation where there is so much going back and forth between both sides of the aisle? When we actually consider his credentials, whether you're liberal or conservative, the man really does have a pretty long track record of judicial work.
Yeah, I mean, if I can put it briefly in a minute or less, we've got an absolute carnival going on in the confirmation hearings, and we saw hints of it before the hearings with NAACP representative calling Kavanaugh a dangerous criminal, a senator saying that he was paving the path to tyranny and so forth. In brief, Kavanaugh has impeccable legal credentials. He's faithful to the Founding Fathers' vision for what a Supreme Court justice should do, and he's got the personal character necessary to hold the high office. And I think everyone in the room knows that. And so this debate, and I can follow up on those three points, this debate should be about those merits. Unfortunately, it's not. It's a back and forth between the two political parties that started when the Democrats borked Robert Bork and has continued with both sides upping the ante continually in this battle and grandstanding.
And
this is the latest iteration of it.
Yeah, and it's almost just difficult to watch. There was one refreshing moment for me yesterday as I was catching some of the proceedings, and that's when a self-described left liberal lawyer, Lisa Blatt, was chosen by Judge Kavanaugh to give his endorsement before he made his first speech in front of the panel. And she said that I'm somebody who would advocate for 9 Justice Ginsburgs on the court. She's so very liberal. She said, but I have to recognize that Judge Kavanaugh brings credentials to the bench. And I thought in this carnival that you referenced, Bruce, it was just sort of this moment of clarity and sanity that we are capable of recognizing credentials, whether or not we agree with the liberal conservative side of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm really glad that Blatt was willing to get up there and put her reputation on the line. She's going to take a beating for that. You know, his legal credentials, he clerked for Anthony Kennedy, who was center or center-left, depending on how you want to view it. He worked for the staff that impeached President Clinton. He worked for George Bush. His education, all those things are impeccable. Then the big deal here is that we've got, and this is the second, I gave 3 reasons, you know, that I think he deserves a seat on the Supreme Court. And the second reason, and this is the real dispute between the Republicans and the Democrats, what is the role of a judge? And so increasingly on the Democratic side in the past few decades, the view has been that the judge's role is to be sort of similar to a congressman, only they've got a lifetime appointment. And the way they play a role similar to a congressman is that they're allowed to reinterpret the Constitution when they deem necessary, so sort of to legislate from the bench. They view the Constitution as a living document, sort of a malleable document, like a wax nose, and the justices are to have the wisdom to know which things should sort of be taken out of the Constitution, which things should be inserted. The conservative view, and it's the view that I hold, is that texts have integrity, and that the Constitution is not like a wax nose, cannot be reinterpreted in light of the times by the justices. If we interpret the if we want to change the Constitution, it needs to be taken to the people. That's what the Founding Fathers wanted. Taken to the people, voted on by Congress. And that's been done. We've got a number of amendments to the Constitution, and that's how it ought to be done today. If you want to insert rights into the Constitution that aren't there, you don't let 5 to 9 Ivy League lawyers in black nightgowns take it upon themselves to change the Constitution. Well, let people do it. Be the legislature.
And I think that's just it, right? It's that battle of how to interpret the Constitution that we see and appreciate. We can catch your article on foxnews.com relative to some of these characteristics, and it's terribly helpful. I know also, too, on your website, bruceashford.net, Christianity for the Common Good, you released a couple of days ago an article talking about the transgender pronoun debate. And, Bruce, we're going to take a little early break so we can give a lot of time to this upcoming segment. And if people want to join the conversation, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. And I want to get your thoughts about how all of these different kinds of pronouns have come into play in our culture and what the implications are going to be for organizational life moving forward. So more to come with Bruce Ashford up next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 11 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and joined by Bruce Ashford of Christianity of the Common Good. He writes on his blog and website, bruceashford.net. I highly recommend going there and seeing some of the updated articles. And, Bruce, we took a little early break. It still doesn't leave us very much time, but this transgender conversation is such an important one. I know you and I spent an hour together on Bill Arnold's show one morning with it, and we could stand to do another hour again like that. But some recent policy implications have come out relative to the use of pronouns and how we're going away from she and he in many organizations, including places like the University of Minnesota. So talk us through what's happening here.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got in the UK and the United States and Canada and other countries in the West, transgender ideology has, you know, now for at least a decade, it really settled in as an important issue, something that's on the map for Americans. And it's being translated now into public policy and public institutions. And when there are now sort of codes, politically correct codes being put in place and enforced, it threatens the livelihood of public employees who may want to respect people with gender dysphoria and care for them, but who want to not use pronouns that are antithetical to what Scripture teaches. But it not only hurts public employees, I think it hurts the free and democratic nature of society. So, when speech codes are put in place that we have to use pronouns such as Z, C, Zir, Here, Co, Ev, Xe, and Thon, and remember, you know, which person aligns with which of upwards of a dozen pronouns, and when that's enforced, it's beginning to cause problems. I'm not sure that people can remember that many pronouns. I know that Christians have difficulty referring to people by pronouns that do not align with that person's biological sex. And so we've got, you know, a difficult road ahead. And in general, what I'm arguing is that these speech codes undermine our religious liberty and our free speech. Do you want to talk about either of those?
Yeah, I would love, you know, just the liberty piece of it. I think it's one of those very difficult things that many believers have to try to figure out relative to institutional structures and secular structures is what does it mean to have my religious convictions, and yet there might be organizational policy that sometimes gets tricky and is even in conflict with our faith. This isn't new to American life now. This has been a conversation for 2,000 years. So what do you recommend about how you hold to the convictions and yet you're part of a different kind of life?
Yeah, see, you know, the religious liberty battle that's going on right now, it's enshrined in the Constitution, but you've got a number of Americans who do want to uphold religious liberty, and the way it's defined in the Constitution and in case law for most of American history has been that religious liberty is the free exercise of religion. So it's not just the freedom to worship God privately and have private beliefs and whisper about it in our homes and our churches. It's that we're allowed to exercise it in public. And part of that exercise is to speak freely about it. Then on the other hand, you've got folks who would like to restrict religious liberty so that it's not the free exercise of religion, but the freedom to worship God privately and to whisper about him in our homes and our churches. But the deal is this. Once you begin to restrict religious liberty and the free speech that's a part of it, you threaten every other freedom that we have. Religious liberty and the free speech that tends to come with it is at the absolute heart of a free and democratic society. And when anyone undermines it, including a transgender person, it will end up hurting all of us, including transgender persons, in the future. It'll be an increasingly authoritarian society.
Well, and eventually, when we see from the annals of history, we see that this kind of conversation often doesn't end well for Christians, and in terms of they tend to become the target of persecution and people that are really the problem in this situation. And it seems, Bruce, at least in the course of my life, that increasingly so Christians in a variety of ways are being viewed as the problem, that if we could just resolve the bigotry, if we could just resolve the sectarianism of Christianity, we'd be fine as a country. But that really would undermine our religious freedoms.
It would. So what you're having now is you're having vague and ambiguous discrimination policies, which are not in the Constitution, and those discrimination policies are being treated as more important as religious liberty and free speech, which are enshrined in the Constitution. The problem is when you undermine these things, as you mentioned a moment ago, it won't go well for Christians. But, I want to say it won't go well for anybody.
Yeah.
When we shut down speech, we encourage hypocrisy. And when we encourage hypocrisy, we won't know who people are, and then we can't persuade them. It undermines social progress. Social progress often depends on free speech, on courageous people speaking up with unpopular ideas and persuading other Americans toward those ideas. Suppression of free speech tilts us in an authoritarian direction. You know, the more control we give to the state and to elected officials to tell us what we can and can't do, can and cannot say, the less democratic we become, the more authoritarian. And then finally, you know, if the train continues to go down the tracks in this direction, Christians will be less free to preach the gospel. We've seen in the UK and in Canada, pastors who were, put in jail briefly for preaching the gospel in relation to gender and sexuality. I think we'll see an increasing amount of those things. I think we'll see certain industries in the U.S. in which Christians won't be able to rise through the ranks and maybe not be able to work at all, like the medical industry and the public education industry. And so I think it's a serious issue. It's not just a matter of a few pronouns here and there. It strikes really at the heart of our first freedoms.
And Bruce, we were out with my wife Hallie and I were out with our two oldest children last night, the teenagers, over dinner, and this conversation came up. What do you have any advice or recommendations for families? Like, how do we begin to talk with our kids about these change in gender pronouns? And you know, they're not maybe processing on quite the critical thinking levels yet. And so this whole thing has got to be wildly confusing for them.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny you say that. My wife and I just this past week have kind of outlined how we want to begin teaching our small children. We have small children about this, and so we're starting with kind of a positive exposition of what the Bible teaches about God's design for the world, marriage being between a man and a woman, and that God created people as man and as woman, that we can't change those things, that that's a given from God. And then after that, we're going to move to teaching them that there are people who disagree with us and who live differently and who want to identify with a gender that's not the one God gave them, or who want to redefine marriage to include something other than one man and one woman. And so we want to start with the positive exposition from the Bible, and then after that, put it in contrast with what other people believe, all the while teaching our children to love and respect the person with whom they disagree, while at the same time being unwilling to be sort of pressured or cowed into believing what we ought not believe. Does that make sense?
It really does, yeah. We got less than a minute left now. I'd be curious, for our young kids too in school, do you encourage them to speak up about their beliefs, or is it just better off at this point, given the bullying, given everything that's going on, to just say, you know, we're going to live a different way, but it's not really a conducive place to be able to share what we believe?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really don't know how to answer it well right now. I think this is something that so many of us we do want our kids to be able to speak the truth, but we're trying to figure out when and how for them to speak the truth, and at what age is it a good time to say the things that they need to say. And so I would leave it as a question mark, something that all of us together as Christians here in America need to figure out.
That's Bruce Ashford, and BruceAshford.net. I highly recommend going to his website, reading some articles on Christianity from the Common Good. Bruce, thanks as always for joining us. I would love to do an hour with you on transgenderism sometime here in the near future.
Great. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Now we'll take a break and wrap up our show for the morning.
so appreciate Bruce's perspective on these matters. He's somebody who's at the forefront of thinking about how we as Christians engage in the culture. As the culture shifts, we have to think about our lives in a different kind of way, and so helpful. So do go to his website, BruceAshford.net, for some really good suggestions about how to live out our faith. We're looking forward to tomorrow's show as we continue to walk out life together in the kingdom. I know I'll be joined by Professor of Theology Jim Bilby. We're going to talk about why there are so many different views of communion. And then we have a new arrival to the Faith Radio Network, Jeremiah Johnston, in the show. And he'll be on tomorrow previewing what he is going to be promoting and being a part of in the network. Looking forward to tomorrow's show. Catch you tomorrow, everybody. And remember, the tomb is empty.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.